Let's talk about Billy Graham and his legacy. Graham died yesterday at 99. Frank Schaeffer knew Billy Graham. His father, Francis Schaeffer, was an evangelical theologian and a contemporary of Graham. Frank Schaeffer has written a number of memoirs and fictional accounts of his experiences of getting out of the evangelical family business. His latest is Letter to Lucy, a manifesto of creative redemption in the age of Trump, fascism, and lies. Nice to talk with you again, Frank Schaeffer.
Thanks for having me back on.
You know, I think most people, even my age, I'm in my 50s, don't remember when Billy Graham first came on the scene. But he came on the scene kind of with an anti-communism message, Christianity versus communism. And this is why Luce and Hearst like puffed him up. And he had a message that they thought would help them, would help the U.S.
Well, let's put it this way. I'm 65 and he died at 99. So I wasn't around then either, but I was a child in the 1950s, and I remember Billy coming to visit us at my Swiss home in the mission that my parents ran called Le Brie Fellowship. So my first memory of Graham was at 9 years of age, and I think that my dad was pretty much of an anti-communist himself at that time. That was very much the flavor of those decades. But Billy, I think, got into the heavy politics a little later. When he became Richard Nixon's confidant and other people's. And of course, later, he grew to regret that specific kind of party politics involvement that he had after he got burned with the Nixon tapes that recorded him agreeing with Richard Nixon, making some anti-Semitic remarks saying that pornography was sourced from Jews mostly. And Billy kind of went with that, then later regretted that. And I remember sitting in the Mayo Clinic with my dad when he was dying of cancer. Billy came to visit in the hospital room, and one of the conversations the three of us had was Billy actually telling my father that he thought he had made a mistake getting so heavily involved in the early days of the anti-abortion movement after Roe v. Wade in 1973, when I had made a film series with Dad and C. Everett Koop, who became Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General, which really kind of started the pro-life movement in terms of the evangelical wing of it. And Billy had never signed up, and Dad and he were still talking about it. And Billy was saying, well, you know, I made the mistake with Richard Nixon and I got too close to specifics in politics. It hurt the gospel of Jesus Christ, made it too contentious. And he ducked out and was one of the evangelical leaders, along with Reverend Criswell, who was then the Southern Baptist president, who specifically would not take a stand on abortion. And that went back to Billy's own experience of getting too close to politics. So that's kind of what I remember personally. As far as his anti-communist rants that made Hearst and others want to puff him, as Hearst said, giving his editors instructions to make Billy famous, I don't remember that. I wasn't there. I'm like anybody else. I've just simply read accounts of that.
It seems like that experience coming to fame with that, though, brought him into the political, and people say that he helped erode the wall of separation between the church and the state, and suddenly a secular United States was a little less secular because this guy, Billy Graham, was around all the time.
Well, you know, there was definitely an overlap in that era between people like the John Birch Society that were going so far as to say that President Eisenhower was somehow involved in some nefarious international communist plot. I mean, just crazy stuff. Incidentally, that was Koch Sr. of the Koch brothers today, who fund so much of the Republican Party. Their father was running this organization that Billy was very aware of and that he had people who were converting at his rallies who were part of. But, you know, you got to remember, he comes out of the Deep South. He comes out of a racist era, and somewhat in his defense, I will say that in 1952, 1953, when Billy was desegregating the rope lines at his rallies and no longer allowing seating for African Americans in one part of the auditorium and saying, look, you know, there is no color bar at the foot of the cross. At that era, that wasn't a given that he spoke out on that. So, yes, he comes out of that anti-communist, hard right, 50s background. But he did depart from it significantly in certain ways. And one of the ways Billy departed from it was simply not going along with the total politicizing of the Republican Party, as has happened, say, on his son Franklin's watch, where Franklin comes out and issues statements criticizing Barack Obama for taking a stand on assault weapons being easily accessible, and says, look, you know, we could collect all the assault weapons and it wouldn't do any good, literally parroting the kind of NRA gun lobby line. You know, Billy simply did not do that kind of thing at any part of his career after, say, his anti-communist stuff in the 1950s and then the Nixon run-in he had. Those would be the two kind of highlights where he kind of became a sort of a precursor of what happened later to the whole religious right in an entirety. Where I think Billy set up something of what we've got today is turning the religious presence in America into sort of part of the entertainment industry, going big time, you know, not just on television, but his very, very slick organization and fundraising apparatus that is kind of a precursor of the world into which Donald Trump has fit so seamlessly, but also the phenomena of the rise of the mega church as a kind of a vast entertainment complex where there's music and movie clips and rock bands and audiences of 10, 15, 20,000. This is very much part of the Billy Graham legacy. So in that aspect of turning American fundamentalist / evangelical Christianity into a mega business and very much to be confused in people's minds with the entertainment business, you know, Billy, by getting on TV and making these crusades what they were, I think began to sort of open the door, perhaps unconsciously, but that's where it went.
Well, his business enterprise, so to speak, was in relationship with his political relationship with the presidents and everything. They were things that fed off each other. He worked those things together. He wanted influence on government. He wanted influence. He wanted, you know, Jesus Christ to help out the president of the United States. And he thought he was doing that, I imagine.
You know, I'm not sure. I think that Billy, like everybody else, you know, he was not a flake and there was no scandal attached to his name in terms of running around on his wife, Ruth, who, by the way, Ruth was a good personal friend of ours. And she called our home one time when her daughter Gigi, who was 17 at the time, had just been engaged to somebody who her father had kind of set her up to date, who was, you know, a good 15, almost 20 years older than her, who is a big donor to his ministry, Stefan Chivijan, whose father, by the way, donated to my father's ministry of Le Brie as well. And they lived in Switzerland. And so when the Grahams came over to visit their in-laws, they would sometimes come by and see us too. And I've, by the way, I had breakfast with Gigi last summer. We've kept up. She's, I think, his oldest daughter and getting on in years herself. And so, you know, there's been a family connection with them. But the Grahams suffered from the entertainment syndrome, not just in terms of what they did to the image of Christianity, but the family itself. These were rock stars and their children grew up really with an absentee father. I think Gigi told me one time there was one year when she saw her dad for all of 2 months in the entire year. You know, when I wrote my memoir, Crazy for God, that I think you and I talked about some time ago, I was expecting a lot of different kind of feedback from people. Well, one of the things I got was a letter from Ruth Graham, not the mother, but the daughter in this case, talking about the fact. And she signed her letter off saying, you told the truth in your book. We, being the sons, daughters, children of evangelical leaders, were, quote unquote, sacrificial lambs. So, you know, one aspect of the whole pro-family evangelical journey on family values and all the rest of this is to understand that the people at the heart of the movement, whether it was Oral Roberts, whose son Richard I knew well, my family to some degree, where I became the nepotistic sidekick to my dad in the 70s and 80s. And then when I left, that was sort of just, you know, written out of the movement when I published my first novel, Portofino, that had humor at the expense of that movement. Or Ruth Graham writing and saying we were sacrificial lambs. If you dig under the surface of the family values people, when it comes to the actual families of the evangelical leaders, you find the second generation, whether it's me who has walked away from the faith and is no longer an evangelical, let alone a right-wing Christian, or Billy's kids who had all the problems with the divorces and the drugs and all the rest of it that's well documented, or, you know, Gigi getting married very young and more or less an arranged marriage to a guy who her dad introduced her to, who was the son of a mega donor who wanted this to happen. There's always this kind of weird undercurrent of the actual facts on the ground never quite matching the idealistic rhetoric. But of course, to be fair, that would be the true of Hollywood stars. It would certainly be true of most political families where you have a very high-flying public figure. You know, but that was something I was intimately equated with because I was experiencing some of that same phenomena in my family, which was a very small thing compared to the giant corporate kind of presence of the Billy Graham organization. But nevertheless, my dad was a very well-known evangelical leader, and that kind of celebrity status was never quite matched by what I write about in this book you mentioned, Letter to Lucy, which was what was going on under the surface. Now, in my dad's case, he was a very different man. And as I talk about in Letter to Lucy, he had such an interest in art and philosophy and culture that provided for his children and family a totally different way of seeing things than simply the quote-unquote preaching of the gospel. And so my dad, you know, when I ran away from boarding school at age 15, where I'd been sent in the UK, took me to the art museums of Italy to kind of reconnect with his son. Unfortunately, you know, Billy never had that kind of cultural aspect to his life. One reason I'm still a person of faith is precisely because my father added that dimension of a larger cultural view of diversity and art and beauty and creativity that I talk about. But in Billy's case, it was this strict preach the gospel, let the chips fall where they may. Anybody who doesn't accept Christ is going to hell. And he was moderate only in the sense that he said, we're not sure who's going to hell. We're not sure who's going to heaven. But he believed in a literal hell. He defended a literal hell. He was a fundamentalist, pitching himself as an evangelical. But when you dug under the surface, Billy was as fundamentalist in his views, if not in his manner, as anybody out there.
I'm talking with Frank Schaefer, who knew Billy Graham. His father, Francis Schaefer, was an evangelical theologian and contemporary of Graham's. And Frank's latest book is Letter to Lucy, a Manifesto of Creative Redemption in the Age of Trump, Fascism, and Lies. Frank, you know, it seems like Billy Graham, though, was much cleverer than a lot of the evangelical fundamentalists these days. He kept himself pretty vague on a lot of issues. And people were able to project whatever they wanted on Billy Graham. You know, his son is, you know, very pro-Trump, and he's out there defending Trump, even with all the allegations about him having affairs with porn stars and everything. And some people really take a bigger edge than Billy Graham, and it doesn't seem to benefit.
Well, you know, I think if you look at it the way somebody from another, a visitor from another planet might, you know, not assuming anything, you have to understand that what Billy did very well was to set up a paradigm of lost or saved. That was the entire purpose of his ministry. So while he personally would say things that sounded more gentle, like, look, you don't know who's saved and who's going to hell, well, let God judge that, and did not write off whole other people's religions, denominations, the way his son did. In fact, he got in trouble, Billy Graham did, with certain evangelicals and fundamentalists who said that Roman Catholics were not Christians. And because he met with bishops and invited Catholics to work with him on his crusades, they hated him for this. But the fact is, Billy Graham still nevertheless had this paradigm of saved and lost. And to understand Trump or the NRA or the hard right or what's happening to our country, you have to see that what Billy did was give evangelicals this identity of we are saved. Everyone else is lost. Come with me to the Billy Graham Crusade so you can get saved too, or you will burn in hell forever, which is a sort of an odd way to look at everybody around you who's not who you know you are, or what your denomination is, whatever it may be. Once that got into the American bloodstream, and of course it had already been there from the Puritans onward in certain aspects, but once it got into the mainstream after America had become more secular, in the 40s and 50s during the World War II era, with women working and other things changing, immigration patterns, Jews coming into the country and so forth. Once this was introduced, then of course, when Sarah Palin comes along and talks about real Americans as opposed to people who disagree with her, or Donald Trump comes along and throws red meat to white nationalists and others, trying to get back to, you know, what he calls Americans' greatness, which is really sort of Jim Crow America. That paradigm of you're with us or against us, this kind of divisiveness, very much broke down the barriers of church and state. Because once you have an idea that some people are real Americans based on their politics agreeing with yours, and other people are not, or some people are going to burn in hell forever because their religion is different than yours or even your denomination, this is not, you know, to put it mildly and not trying to be, you know, sarcastic here, but this is no way you build a cohesive society. So Billy, while personally coming across as kinder and gentler, in his theology, was very much a fundamentalist. And what Billy could never deal with was something that, you know, most evangelicals don't want to hear. And that is that in their theology, taken to the limit, and even with caveats of who knows who's saved and lost, you know, Hitler may burn in hell because he was evil and he didn't accept Jesus as his savior, or, you know, in some cases, because he was a Roman Catholic, if from an evangelical point of view, back in my day. But so does the little girl who was gassed at Auschwitz 5 minutes later. She's burning in hell, too, because she's a Jew who never accepted Jesus. Now, that's not the way Billy presented it at his rallies. But that is the nub, that is the heart of why he was in the business of trying to get people saved. And that is the idea that compassion dictates that anyone who doesn't buy into the exact formula of accepting Jesus as your personal savior, praying the sinner's prayer, et cetera, is lost. So however this is all dressed up as America's pastor and all the rest of it, that note, when it is politicized by people like Franklin, leads to a kind of fatal arc of decline of not just civility, but even the ability to have a country as we understand the word. So Billy's veneer of pious civility is long gone now from the white evangelical movement. And it's replaced by Billy Graham's own worst inner demons, if you want to put it this way, that he repented of after he'd become Nixon's confidant and said, well, I'll never do this again. But the fact is his movement moved on. And not only did they do that again with people like Franklin Graham's leadership and Jerry Falwell Jr.'s leadership, where he's asked his student body to arm, talk about supporting the NRA agenda, and actually carry weapons on campus in case they, quote unquote, come here. And the they he means was somebody he's talking about in chapel, Muslims, very specifically. The cat's really out of the bag. So Trump may represent an era that is the conclusion, if you want to put it this way, of the very natural, logical progression of the original kind of fundamentalist paradigm of black or white, lost or saved, good and evil, and with no nuance, no paradox, no uncertainty. So fundamentally, I think what Billy Graham preached during his lifetime was a kind of certainty addiction. I will give you certainty that you know exactly what the purpose of your life is, what will happen to you after you die. You don't have to worry about these things anymore. Just say the formula prayer and you're in. And that has not led to a good place for America, I don't think.
You know, it's interesting to look at Franklin Graham. And he runs this charitable organization, Samaritan's Purse. They do international funding of things. And he goes out there and they're building a clinic in the Rohingya camps in Bangladesh. And he is, you know, out there to show them the light of Jesus Christ and things like that. But he is building them a clinic and he says, I love you. And he's trying to get people to be not the sinner anymore. But he does say he loves these people who are, I guess, going to burn in hell, but unless they jump up on the Jesus Christ bandwagon. But is that, compassionate enough?
If you look at the history of the evangelical movement, of course, it's not unique. Because just to be fair to evangelicals, if you talk to Saudi Arabian royals and Wahhabist imams in the Saudi royal family, they would tell you the same thing about Christians. And so they would say that, you know, there's going to be a terrible judgment against people who don't accept the one truth as they see it. Meanwhile, in India, you have Hindu nationalists who are rampaging through towns, killing people because they sold some beef and slaughtering them. Unfortunately, what I'm trying to say here is that the problem that Franklin Graham has tapped into and become part of, whether it's going to bat for the National Rifle Association, or blasting Muslims, or saying that gays need to change their ways and have chosen this behavior and they can cure themselves by accepting Jesus, whatever it may be, or going back to Billy Graham's own sometimes anti-gay statements or saying that people burn in hell. This idea of sort of an exclusive path towards truth is not just a Christian or evangelical problem. And it is one. Where it affects us most deeply is in the current political climate we are experiencing right now as we speak, where we have the evangelicals who have doubled down on supporting someone who's not only in his own lifestyle, but in his method of governing, his attack on the poor for medical care for children, leaving tens of thousands of so-called dreamers adrift who have been here since children and playing games with them. Aside from just personal immorality that fundamentalists of my parents' generation would have deemed as absolutely unacceptable, you have policy things that are counter to everything that someone like Franklin Graham would be raising millions of dollars to do in building his clinic. Where he really ought to be building a clinic as well is in so many American cities and rural areas unserved by medical science in these days, in places that have now begun to means test Medicaid for people, saying that if you're poor and you need medical care, we want you to get a job and somehow fit in our idea of right-wing social engineering of the worthy poor before we're going to help you. You know, this goes back to the Dickensian era of workhouses in Victorian Britain that supposedly Dickens wrote about and changed. We're headed back in that same era with the blessing of people like Franklin Graham. So I would say the problem with his clinic for the Rohingya may be that he's building a clinic for people he think will be burning in hell unless they accept Jesus. That's a theological problem. There's another problem, and that is the hypocrisy involved in raising money for relief efforts around the world and then following a president who refers to people who live in brown and black countries as living in S-hole countries and dismisses them at the foot of the cross, as it were, to borrow the evangelical term, or building a clinic for the sick somewhere while your brothers in Christ are pushing in American states to means test Medicaid for the poorest of the poor. That's the underlying problem with supporting Trump at this point. It isn't just the personal lifestyle, quote unquote. It is the program that flies in the face of the very fundamental ideas of Christian charity.
I'm talking with Frank Schaefer, and he has written a number of memoirs and fictional accounts of his experiences getting out of the evangelical family business. His father was Francis Schaefer. He was a contemporary of Billy Graham. And Frank's latest book is Letter to Lucy, A Manifesto of Creative Redemption in the Age of Trump, Fascism, and Lies. Frank, tell us a little about this book, Letter to Lucy. Who is Lucy? What is this?
Well, the first thing I just want to mention is some boilerplate, and that is it's available on Kindle Fire and iBooks only right now. There will be a print edition coming. We started on the high-tech side because it is a touch book. It is an interactive book. It has about 1,000 illustrations, including movie clips and things like Green Day punk rock videos and everything else that download when you put it on your tablet or on your Kindle Fire. It doesn't send you to other links. It's one of the only books out there like this right now. And the reason why it came out this way first is because I trace not only my own journey out of the evangelical movement and away from right-wing politics represented by people like Donald Trump, but I think give an overall view of our culture from the point of view of a grandfather, that's me, of 5 grandchildren, one of whom is Lucy, that I get up every morning and make decisions to help lead in a different direction and really have kind of thought hard about what I want to pass on. And what I want to pass on is the idea fundamentally of the intrinsic worth of beauty, that the most inarguable truth of life to me at age 65 with these grandchildren, 3 of whom I do daycare for every day, now ages 9, 7, and 3, is that beauty does not need an argument to support it. So turning off the television set and going for a walk in the forest or down on a little muddy stretch of beach by a river, doing an art project, going to the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston where I live, rather than just to an amusement park all the time, these things add up to a cultural experience that actually leads away from the entertainment, cheap, lousy, commercialized corporate culture that somebody like Trump represents. So Lucy is not just a fictional character. She is my granddaughter, Lucy. And she also is the Lucy fossilized remains of one of the first transitional beings into the human form back in the evolutionary history of our race. And so kind of I'm giving her an update, that Lucy, the one in Africa, saying, look, here's where we're at today. But I'm also telling my granddaughter, listen, you know, given a choice, we don't have to choose between Donald Trump on one hand and rabid evangelical fundamentalism on the other. There's a lot to be learned from art, from beauty, from music, from decent parenting, from caring for children by not plunging them right into the electronic media age. And ironically, of course, I'm saying all this on iBooks because of the high-tech platform they offer. So I know that, speaking of hypocrisy, it's a little bit crazy, but the book is a real roller coaster of an experience visually. I teamed up with Ernie Gregg, who's a wonderful graphic designer and video designer who has made my writing live through the illustrations, the videos, the TV show clips from Breaking Bad to The Sopranos to you name it that I talk about. And so the book, okay, this sounds pretentious, I'm sorry to say it, but I think I chart a course toward what I hope would be an American Renaissance that would sweep away this kind of cheap, easy, sad, lowest common denominator approach to not just education and child rearing, but now to politics, where everything is a glib kind of ridiculous tweet. So I also talk about my parents, Francis and Anita Schaefer, and the access to art they gave me and how that has lasted and the contrast with the direction of the rest of the evangelical community. So the book is memoir. The book is an appeal for a creative and artistic approach to child rearing, and it is a kind of a how-to response on the creative life from the point of view who himself, someone himself, that's me, is a writer and artist, and how this fits together with my own journey of faith. And that may sound convoluted, but by the end of the book, I think people would get the point that beauty matters and there's a better way to achieve experiencing beauty in our lives than the cheap entertainment culture and the politicized world we now live in.
Sounds terrific. You know, one of the last appearances Billy Graham made was at a birthday party, and at his table was Donald Trump and Melania Trump. They were there at a birthday party. I think it was 95 at the time. They were saying happy birthday to him. I saw clips of it on television. Did Billy Graham really take a ride like the country did to where we are today? He kind of journeyed along. A lot of people who were Democrats hopped on with Nixon. You know, some hopped on with Reagan. Some people are Trump supporters.
When it comes to Billy being a Trump supporter or not, you know, one can't say. I can say, though, that I know some of the family, and it's been a long time since Billy was completely together in just terms of the aging process. So I doubt seriously that he knew who was sitting there singing to him. The fact of the matter is, looking at Trump, though, you know, Trump is a con artist from my point of view, and a very flaky individual who always had in any room to the spotlight. And that would have been the place to be at a birthday party, would be sitting next to Billy Graham if it's his birthday party. I think what's more interesting is who put him next to him and why was he there? Well, obviously he was being included because he was somebody on the right of American politics who was already being courted by people like Franklin and other evangelical right-wingers, far right-wingers. You know, the glow that Billy cast at that meeting was probably not chosen on his part, very much a strategic move by Trump and part of a larger picture of a shift to the right by Billy's own son and so forth. And I would just say the contrast for me visually of seeing a picture of Melania and Trump sitting next to Billy Graham was that, you know, I remember back in the day that Billy was talking about how, you know, whether it was dancing or card playing or drinking or Roman Catholics or communists or premarital sex, you know, this was a very strict fundamentalist evangelical. So if you wanted to kind of examine the arc of where evangelicalism had gone in following Donald Trump, you could take that picture and put quotes from Billy Graham over a lifetime in terms of the moral life, the Christian life, and so forth, juxtaposed to Franklin Graham and Jerry Falwell Jr. and others justifying what Trump had been doing with his life and his policy based on the fact that, as Franklin says, somehow this was God's will, that God had given us this president. If you took Billy back to 1965 or 1973 and you showed him, you know, news clips or articles about who Trump was and said, you know, could you ever envision a day where the people who came to Christ at your crusades would become the backbone, the voting white American evangelical backbone who would put this man in power? I can tell you from my personal knowledge of Billy Graham, he would have just laughed in your face. He would have chuckled and thought you were joking. It would have seemed impossible. But kind of like the frog being boiled to death by turning up the heat a couple degrees every hour, that is what has happened. Evangelical leaders back in Billy's heyday never, never could have pictured the day when this would be okay. And I think that's the interesting lesson to draw from that kind of visual picture of the two of them together.
Frank Schaefer is the author of Letter to Lucy, a manifesto of creative redemption in the age of Trump, fascism, and lies. And we were talking about his book and about Billy Graham, who he knew with his father, Francis Schaefer. Thanks a lot for joining us. Good talking with you again.
Thank you so much.